The world of ministry to teenagers can offer a full range of emotion, interesting challenges, rewarding victories, and discouraging difficulty. It is important to remember that the work we do with students is vital. It is good to be reminded that what you do matters and is appreciated. We hope that the time you spend here will encourage you and equip you to hit the mark in life and ministry. Welcome to the SCOPOST Podcast, impacting youth ministry in Oklahoma and beyond.
Hello and welcome to the SCOPOST Podcast. This is Todd Sanders, Student Education Specialist here at the BGCO, and I'm in studio today with...
Mike Keybone. What's
up, y'all? Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm doing fantastic. Doing right? It's Falls Creek Week, baby.
Yeah, it's good to have you with us, and thanks for sitting down with us, taking a few moments out of your schedule to kind of talk about life and ministry.
I love it. Absolutely love it.
Let me ask you this. You can tell us a little bit about your family, where you serve, and then kind of what makes you tick in ministry. What okay. drives you?
Okay, that's easy. I love talking about my family. I have a beautiful wife named Jennifer, and is definitely the backbone of our family and takes on a lot to free me up to be able to do ministry as we do ministry together. So she does a double load, so she's amazing. And I've got three awesome kiddos. My oldest daughter is Hannah. And my middle is my son, Micah, and my youngest is Sarah Gracie. And so she's six, my son is nine, and my daughter's going to be in youth ministry in the fall. Ooh. As a 12-year-old. So
raising the stakes.
They're awesome, man. I love it. And so I got my eye on my youth pastor, man. Now, it's become more important to me than ever.
That's right.
And so now we got a good one in Brian Meister. But it's man, it's a great season. What makes me tick, I love investing in people, and I love when they find out what their gifts are, what their talents are, their abilities are. They figure out the resources that God has given them, and then they redirect that. In our church, we call it being body engaged. You know, we're Christ-led, we're body engaged. And so as you walk with God and He reveals those things to you, you use those things for His glory, for ministry. And so that's a lot of our DNA in our church, and I love it. And we've seen some incredible ministries come out of that.
That's great.
So yeah, that's my passion, just to see a person do what they're called to do.
Yeah, that's great. So let me kind of pause there and kind of pull from that. What are some practical things maybe, and this is what we do in order to do that. Maybe our listeners could draw from that practical experience to help them in their setting. How do you get people body engaged? What are some things you do to make that process happen?
Okay, I've got a great couple of examples of that. There was a lady in my church, her name was Jennifer, and not my wife, but another lady named Jennifer, and she'd make these appointments with me every week. And the way that those appointments went is that she would come to my office, cry for about 30 minutes, just break down over what she called vulnerable children. You know, these are kids that are in DHS custody, that are grading out of DHS custody. They're getting stuck in the system. They're getting stuck in human trafficking, you know, and she would just be broken. Like, where is God in all this? And just weep and cry. And so after about the third session, I said, Jen, let's start to pray. And I know your heart is to rescue every vulnerable kid, but let's just start with how God might use you to reach one. And so I said, God has obviously given you a passion, given you a desire. So let's see what He's trying to do with you. And so she began to pray through that. Todd, she came back about a week and a half later, and she handed me a stack of documents. She had written down in this vision, this plan. She called it Cherished Ministries. And so in Cherished Ministries, there was a plan in place to help introduce people to fostering kids. A plan that introduced us to a great, great tool called Care Portal through DHS. All of these different ministries she just found that would help achieve trying to help these vulnerable kids. And so it was a perfect plan. I challenged her to put a team together that would help her drive after this plan. She assembled a team of about 20 people. And so in the first 6 months of her engaging this ministry, I mean, chasing after this thing, we had 16 families that started the process of being able to foster kids in the system. We started this care portal ministry. Basically, DHS contacts us with parents that are really trying hard to keep their kids, and they're doing everything that they can, but they just run into a wall, and there's just something beyond their control. So, for example, you know, in DHS, if you have three kids, but you only have two beds, well, they can take that child that doesn't have a bed out of the home. And so blast goes out on care portal, hey, we need a twin bed, like, now. And so I think our average response time is within 20 minutes. Oh, wow. We're able to get it. And so in all of the United States, our church with care portal is in the top five. I think last time I checked, we were number three, and that's churches of all sizes. And it's just the response time, the area of reach. And here's the beautiful thing, is that it's just the people in our zip code. And so when DHS shows up at that place with the bed, they tell them, hey, this came from the people at Cherokee Hills Baptist Church, and we can send a message. So just, they just want you to know we love you and we care about you and your family, and we're wishing you the best. And so through Care Portal, we help with furniture, bus passes, making sure they can get to work. If they need minor repairs done on their home, you know, if you have exposed wires, things like that, those things are unsafe. And so we have a team that'll go in, patch those holes. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And so all of that, which I think is one of our best ministries, came from just that, this woman being Christ-led. Man, God put a burden on her heart as she spent time in the Word and prayer and all of that, and then showed her what she could do, and had this huge burden to try to reach them all, but kind of said, hey, let's start with one at a time. So God birthed this ministry. It's one of the best things that we do. Yeah, another one is a guy named Larry Pyle, and he started a ministry called Fixers of Men. And so all he's done is gather men in our church and our community to go out basically door to door, find needs that, you know, repair needs that people have in their homes, and they meet those needs. Sometimes they've donated, I think, four vehicles to this point now. They found families that didn't have any transportation. It was crippling them as far as getting jobs and things like that. And so they're on their fourth car that they've donated. Wow. as an organization, as a ministry. And so that's kind of what I'm talking about when, yeah, I say Christ-led, yeah, body engaged. And so, right, ministry's being birthed out of our people. Yeah.
Yeah. So when people's passion meets a need, there's an opportunity, and that leads to action.
Absolutely.
And you guys are doing that. There's some creative ways. Many may know about your engagement with some of the schools and athletic teams, football, yes, teams. So maybe share that, as well as I think you messaged me back in the spring or maybe earlier this year, and you were asking about single parenting, people who come in to do conferences, because you've identified a zip code around you. And again, another need where it's like the percentage of single adult, you know, parents in that zip code
It's astounding. Incredible. It was 80% of that zip code were single parents.
Yeah.
And most of those single moms. You know, when we jump back to the school for a second, when you look at a community, regardless of whether it's a small town, I've been in both. I've been in small town, that's where I started ministry, and I've been in a more urban setting too. And the thing that I know is that every community basically is centered around the school system. So community's got kids, they've got parents. Parents are engaged, or should be. And so we knew that we needed an opportunity with our schools. And so one step for us as a family was, we'd been homeschooling for all of our kids' education, and God put it on our heart to put our kids into the local elementary school, right where our church is at. And so we didn't send them in as missionaries, you know, because I don't think they're ready for being missionaries. But they are lights. And then my wife and I get to be the missionaries as parents. And so we get to know the teachers, we get to know the other parents. And so we have a moment there to engage the elementary schools. We, at our high school, we have some teachers that go to our church. And, you know, right now it's a pretty discouraging time for teachers. And so to be able to rally our church, to use those natural relationships, start investing in the school without asking for anything in return. And so we started by just, you know, gift bags and encouraging notes and treats and things like that for all the teachers in the teachers' lounge. And so we've tried to target elementary school, middle school, high school. And through that process, there was an opening that came up in the football program there at PCO. And I ended up becoming the chaplain for the guys. And so I'm on my first day on the job, just hanging out with the football team, never met a lot of these guys before. And I start talking to one of the coaches. And the Lord, I believe, prompted this question. I said, so on a Friday night, how many of these guys don't have somebody coming to watch them play football? And Todd Wright, I mean, without hesitation, he said, oh, I'm guessing probably around 80%. And I thought he misunderstood my question. And so I restated it, and he said, no, 80% easily. And so I still didn't believe him. I said, well, why don't you send me a roster and just mark on there families that you know? And I said, we'll see what we can do as a church. And so that evening I got the roster, and he had a note that said it was easier to mark the ones who did have people coming to their games than didn't. And sure enough, out of 80 football players, 60 had nobody coming to support them on a Friday night. And so that very next Sunday, I rallied my church and just said, hey, we've got a roster full of guys. They need a fan in the stands, somebody to root them on and wear their numbers and their colors. And you don't have to know anything about football. Just show up. And we're going to commit to show up on home games and just be in the stands. And if you see them before the game and after the game, encourage them a little bit. And those were the only parameters. And Todd, that first home football game, our church filled up an entire section. And what I loved about it was young and old. We had senior adults there. They didn't even know when to cheer, some of them, you know. So we had to kind of coach them up a little bit and that. But, man, it was so fun. And I was down on the sideline, and I heard all the chatter. You know, all the guys like, man, who are these people? Like, what are they doing? They're like, I don't know, but they're wearing my number. You know, like, it's just a really cool process. And so through that, we've been able to help families. We found, you know, my initial thought was that maybe there are a lot of deadbeat families. You know, they're just not taking the responsibility to love on their kids. You know, I was kind of mad for them. And what we found out was that was not the story. The story, for the most part, was that you had some parents that are working multiple jobs and want to be there, but they can't, or they've got, you know, a big family they can't afford to bring to the games. And so we were able to approach the school district. We got a bunch of free passes, season passes, for parents that couldn't afford it, so they could get their families in, didn't cost them anything. And we were able to, you know, we take pictures and video for parents that can't come. You know, we met one family where the dad had left 3 years ago, and they hadn't had a Christmas in 3 years. She's working multiple jobs, putting herself through school to try to make a better way for her family. And so the family that adopted that family from our church, that they provided them, got with the community businesses and things like that, and they gave them the dream Christmas this last Christmas. And it was awesome. We got to see the whole family baptized. I mean, it's just incredible, you know. And so a lot of things like that. And so I think if somebody wants to engage their community, I think the first place I would start is with the school and build those relationships, see what the needs are, and not ask for anything in return. Just love on them. Yeah. And I think that was huge. We were actually attacked by an atheist organization, and they tried to get our ministry to stop. But the reason why they couldn't were two reasons. One, there wasn't any leverage on our part. We weren't trying to get anything out of the school. And then the other part was that our community fought for us. They said, we want them there. And so leave us alone, basically. And so the ministry is alive and well there, and it's an awesome, awesome part of making us a part of the community. So
that's great. That's a great handle for people to grab hold of and see how you can turn apathy into action. And we talked about that this weekend in this idea of finishing and living out our faith, that the attitude that we approach life with, even when things get difficult, can determine much about the success of how we endure. And action is one of those things we talked about.
That's right.
So important. So look for opportunities and those kinds of things. Now, I want to spend some time, because you guys have been a great. I think you have some great practical examples of a church engaging a community. But you've also engaged different types of communities. You alluded to that fact a moment ago. You've been in urban settings. You've been in very rural settings. You've served on staff as youth pastor. You've been a full-time evangelist. You're serving as a pastor now. So you have a pretty varied, you know, approach and exposure to the church and church staff life. And I wanted to pick your brain, I told you this earlier, just about staff relationships. And maybe you as a pastor speaking into our listeners, which most will be, hopefully we have some pastors that listen as well, but most will be student pastors or youth workers, youth leaders. What words of encouragement and then maybe some practical things that they could do that would help them foster healthy staff relationships with their pastor? And working with those that are over them in leadership.
You know, one of the things that I tried to do when I was a youth pastor was I came into every situation understanding who my boss was. And my boss wasn't my pastor. My boss was the Lord. God called me into ministry. He put me in that position, that place. And so what that does is it frees you up. Whether, you know, the honest truth is, I mean, so there are some pastors that are great with their staff, and there are some that are a little challenged for their staff, and maybe that's putting a little nicely. But sometimes you can work for a pastor that it's hard on you a little bit and those kind of things, or very demanding, or, you know, some are completely disconnected. I mean, there's just like anything. But if I allow what they think of me to drive me, or if I allow it to knock me down or whatever, then I'm in a lot of trouble. If I'm going to put, you know, my eggs in a human basket, I'm in trouble, right? But if I know that I'm working for the Lord, then my motivation stays in a really healthy place, right? And so first, God's my boss, and then my spiritual authority is my pastor. And so I always went in, Todd, with the mindset of I want to be a help to him. Like, I've always had like this healthy respect for what my pastor did. You know, I thought about, you know, how much my little area stressed me out, you know, and the things that I went through and things, you know, how tired I was. And I thought, my gosh, you know, I'm just one little section of that plate, whereas my pastor is in charge of the whole plate. And so he has to answer for me, the children's ministry, the young adult ministry, the senior, you know, he's in charge of everything, all the inner workings. And so I used to literally thank God all the time that I didn't have to be a pastor, because I just had such a healthy respect. And I always thought, you know, kids are resilient. If you mess up a youth ministry, they'll bounce back. You mess up a church, God may not let you into heaven, you know. So I was just like, I just had a healthy fear, healthy respect that position. And so my heart was, I want to make his job easier. You know, and so part of my giftedness was I love to preach, and that was a passion of mine. And so to be able to give him a break when he just needed a break, or to be able to preach when he was gone or out of town, to help do hospital visits, to, you know, even if they weren't in student ministry, right? If they weren't even related, just to help where I could, and just know that I was available to take some things off his plate. You know, I think, and that helped a lot. And so that was good. And just trying to be proactive in not causing headaches. You know, there's a lot of things that we can do sometimes. And I've always been fortunate to have pastors that probably took a lot of chewings on my behalf. You know, I mean, I did things that were just dumb. You know, you think, man, this is going to be really cool. And there were some things that probably weren't as great as I thought they were. And people probably told my pastor, and he probably defended me. You know what I mean?
Right.
And yeah. And so I try to, you know, as I've learned those things growing through ministry, I tried to make sure that I thought through things well, so that I wasn't putting my pastor in an awkward position. Because you put a guy in a bad enough position enough times, things are going to get rough for you. You know, that thing. So, and be an encourager for your pastor. You know, a lot of times those guys, if you got a good pastor, they're encouraging you, telling you a great job, you know, doing a great job. They're lifting you up and those kind of things. And you got to think, well, who's telling them? You know, and so building into them, encouraging them. And so that's kind of how I was wired. And so I had good relationships, but I also know that there's a lot of times when guys don't have that. And so, man, I go back to square one, you know, make sure you know who you're doing it for, and to do it excellent, and to do it well, and to pray for your pastor, pray for that relationship, and ask God for practical ways to try to bridge that gap. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally. Let me ask the flip side of this. What, as you as a pastor now, what would you say to your pastor compadres about forming healthy relationships with your student pastor? Just three quick things.
Oh, I love this so much. And this may go over time here.
You're fine.
One of the things, Todd, that I have absolutely loved about being a pastor is understanding that the guys that God has put under my care to shepherd as a staff are the most valuable tools that God could ever give me. And when I see them that way, and I cherish them, and I value them, I have a desire in my heart, and this is kind of the way I function. And I told them when I first met with them, I said, if you don't function a majority of your day in your giftedness, and they make fun of me because I say, if you don't function 51% of your day in your passion, then that's your own fault. Because as your pastor, I'm going to do whatever I have to do on my side to free you up so that a majority of what you do is what you love. And so I know that my youth pastor needs to be out in the community. He needs to be where the students are. He needs to be meeting parents. And 99% of the time, that's not in his office. And so I trust him, you know. And so if he's not in his office, I'm already thinking he's where he needs to be. And I just trust that. And my gosh, I don't ever want him putting his time on a timesheet because I don't want to see that. You know, I know how hard he's working. I know what he's doing. I know what he's doing is valuable. And so letting him do what he's called to do, trusting that, I think, you know, realizing that as these guys are a blessing to you, free them up to do their job, free them up to do their giftedness. And I think that trust comes, and I think this maybe kind of blends into a number two, is you have to be, as a pastor, intentional about building relationships with them. Because they're kind of in this weird dynamic, and I've seen this better being on the pastor side, where they're having to look at you as their boss, as their employer, and at the same time, they're not sure if they can be your friend, right? And so they're not going to engage you. They're not going to try to build that friendship because they don't know where your lines are drawn. And so as the pastor, I think you have to be proactive to let them know, listen, I love you. I care about you. You're valuable to me. I trust you. I mean, that was the thing. I think if I were to look back in my youth ministry days, when I had pastors that looked me in the eye and said, I love you and I trust you, I'm telling you, bro, I'd charge hell with a water pistol for that guy. You know, and I would always have that guy's back no matter what, because that just meant something to me. Right. And so I try to do that with my guys all the time. I want to make sure they know that they're valuable to me. You're the best tool that God has given me. And also, man, I trust you to do what you're doing. And then I try to find ways, maybe this is the third thing, to invest in them, to make them better at what they do. And that's not micromanaging. That is, you know, as I see things going, try to make sure that they're, you know, if I know a guy, you know, I'm so far removed now, I think, from youth ministry. I don't know how much of an expert I would be in that because things have changed so much. But I'm in contact because I speak and travel a lot with guys that are, I mean, amazing, right? And so if I can connect dots and say, hey, man, you guys ought to have a talk. You know, you could learn this or that, but it's just a resource. I'm not telling you to go do it, but I just, this is what I came across. And so I pass things like that on. And then along with that, spiritual development and just helping disciple my staff and love on them. And you know, we do that through a weekly Bible study where we just have freedom to just walk through scripture together. I'm not preaching to them and I'm not bossing around in that spiritual sense. I'm just saying, hey man, here's what the word says. What do you guys think? You know, what's God doing in your life? And so, and the way we do it too, we do a couple of different staff retreats. We do a staff retreat that is just work. And then we have one other staff retreat, Todd, where we just go play together and have fun, have a good time. And they love that. I think that's our favorite time. And so I tell you, at the end of the day, having practiced those things for the last 3.5, almost 4 years, it'll be 4 years in August, I have seen an incredible relationship with my staff. And we love each other. We trust each other. Everybody knows that when they speak, they're heard, literally, really heard, right?
Right.
And they're listened to.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and I think this is a hard thing for pastors sometimes, there's other people that have better ideas than you.
Yeah.
And a better perspective than
right,
you. And
right.
You've got these guys that they're boots on the ground, man. And they're seeing things that you can't see. And you need to be able to trust that. And you know, they're use that wisdom that God's given them. And so our guys know that, man. They've got that freedom. They can speak into things. And I'm not offended when their idea is better than mine. And I'm not offended when they shine brighter than I do. In fact, I feel like it's my responsibility. And I think, pastors, if you would take this to heart, it's my responsibility to make sure that people know that they shine. You know, when Brian does something great in our youth ministry, I tell our people about it. When Mark does something great with our, I mean, he's an invaluable resource in our church. Mark's been there for 20 years. He's our associate pastor. And so he's always got these moments where God's using him in brilliant ways. And so all these guys have these moments. And so we let the church know. Man, I say, man, you should have saw Mark, or you should have saw Brian, or you should have saw David, or you should have seen Cameron this. And man, our people respond to that, and they love it. In fact, I'll tell you, this is really cool. And I know I'm chasing a bit of a rabbit, but this is fun. So when we come back from our work retreat, we have it in December. So we go through vision for the next year. We work through a lot of that stuff. And so that very first Sunday in January, all of our whole staff in that Sunday morning service basically gives a report for our vision for the next year. And so they hear the heart of every one of our staff members. And our folks have loved it. We've done that for 3 years now. And they feel that they see the unity that we have because we, you know, we play and have a lot of fun throughout that weekend. And so we kind of have these little inside jokes that we share with the church. But the church sees us play together. They see that we love together. You know, they see all these really cool moments. And I'm telling you, it's healthy for a church to see that. So anyway, I think I may have chased something there. But
no, that's great.
I hope it's helpful.
That's great. Very, very good wisdom there, I think, just as far as dealing with staff on both sides, and I appreciate you speaking to both sides of it. Last thing that I want to talk about, you said earlier you love preaching, you know, and you have the opportunity to do that, and I think many of our listeners probably know you primarily not as the role of pastor, but as in a communicator of the gospel to whatever the age group. What would be three encouragements that you would give to our listeners? Because our listeners are either teaching in a Sunday school class, or they're teaching a small group, or they're a youth minister, bivocational, full-time, whatever, but they're in front of kids teaching the Word of God. Three encouragements. You would just say, do these three things and make sure that you do these three things as you teach and you lead out through the Word.
You know, I shared a little bit this last night from the stage, and I want you folks to understand this too. What we get to see at the camp, a lot of times the band and the worship, you know, the worship leader and the speaker gets sort of an exalted state, you know, they kind of are the celebrities of camp, if you will. And what I try to remind the students and the adults that that are in their lives is that, man, these adults, these Sunday school teachers, these volunteer sponsors, these part-time youth pastors, full-time youth pastors, they're in your life every single day. Man, they laugh with you, they cry with you, they do life with you. And that's all the seeds of the gospel. And those are seeds being planted, those are seeds being watered and cultivated. And when we gather like this in a camp setting or whatever, and you see a harvest, we've seen incredible harvest this week. And when you see that harvest, a lot of times the tendency is for the students or even some of the adults to put that on the camp leaders, right? And really, and what does the scripture say? That it's God who gets the glory because he's the one that brings the harvest, right? We're all just planters, water, seed, you know, all that. And so I tell them, you guys are the real heroes in this story because you're doing life with them every day. And so as a part of that, I think the three things that I would say are keep encouraging you to do. One is to stay faithful to the Word. When you are faithful to the Word of God, he guards your heart. He shapes your heart. He leads you. I always think about in Jeremiah, when you read that first chapter of Jeremiah, you hear a few things in it. You hear that God raises up Jeremiah, God gifts Jeremiah, and he sends Jeremiah. And Jeremiah is very aware of what he's supposed to do and what he's supposed to say because God tells him, right? And so I think when you stay in the Word and you're tenacious about your time in the Word, God's going to give you direction in your ministry, whether you're a teacher, whether you're a sponsor, a mentor, discipling someone, whatever. He's going to give you a vision for what your role is in that ministry, and he's going to keep you in check. I mean, we live in a time and a season where youth pastors, pastors in general, leaders in ministry have a huge target on their chest. The enemy's going after them. And so if we're not diligent in being in the Word, our heart's not guarded, our mind's not guarded, man, anything can happen, right? But more than that, it's just that if we're true to that, true to the Word, man, he's always going to be speaking to us about what we're supposed to be doing in our ministry. And then also to really pray. Golly, Todd, I think as I've traveled the country, I've pulled a lot of audiences because I've wanted to know. I hear all these stats about prayer and Bible study and daily time with the Lord and all of that. And so for me, I want to know, is that accurate? Is that real? And so I'll ask questions almost everywhere I go. And I will tell you, there is an epidemic of people who do not pray, who do not spend any time with the Lord in prayer, asking God to move in the lives of their students, asking God to move in the lives of the people they teach in their Sunday school class. But when you start praying for things specifically and you start to see God do some incredible things, golly, that's powerful, right? And so God moves in that way. And then the third thing is to don't give up. Don't give up. You just never know the impact that you're having. You know, sometimes guys get to celebrate and half their Sunday school get saved, right? And sometimes you feel like you don't see anything. But then later on, these kids come back. They can't remember a single sermon that a guy like me preach, but they can remember the love that was shown to them from a Sunday school teacher, and that changed their life forever, right? Mm-hmm. And so don't give up. Don't you know, get your eyes fixed on what people would call tangible results. Believe in what God's doing through you. He's called you to do it. Stay faithful in word, stay faithful in prayer, and don't give up.
That's great. Mike, thanks so much for your time. Know that you got a lot going on, and thanks for taking some time out of a busy afternoon.
Love this.
Always
love
good to talk to you, and I know that our listeners will take some encouragement away, as well as some practical tips and then some great advice from your perspective.
So, well, you guys are doing it right, man. I appreciate you so much.
Well, we appreciate you. And thanks for listening today. Thanks for tuning in to the Scopos podcast, where we help you hit the mark in life and ministry. We'll catch you next time. Thanks.
Scopos and the Scopos podcast are ministries of the BGCO and made available through the generous gifts of Oklahoma Baptist to the cooperative program. Find out more about Oklahoma Youth Ministry at scopos.org.